Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albracht and Tommy Kester.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome in. It is Sports Daily on a Tuesday. Jacob Albracht, Tommy Kester coming to you live here on a Tuesday morning. Dan Israel, our Chiefs insider, joins us. Top of the next hour. Perfect timing for Dan Israel. Glad to have Dan in. As the Chiefs make another trade, Tommy, Brett Beach is feeling froggier than you think he will, and he just keeps on hopping. And I love it. And we'll get into the trade made yesterday as we make our way through. World Series, is it over at 3-0 for the Dodgers? We can dig into that as well, as it's been all Dodgers in this series so far. Got Monday Night Football. I got to tell you, I'm going to put this out there into the world right now. And we'll talk about it in a little bit. I think that the Steelers are the best team in the AFC North. So chew on that for a minute. And we'll get into what happened last night as they take care of the New York Giants. All kinds of good stuff for you today. Of course, the IHOP hotline is open at 869-1240. It is brought to you by IHOP. You can celebrate the weekdays with our new IHOP House Faves. All your favorites for just $6 Monday through Friday. We will get into maybe a little bit of K-State moving forward in the week. I know you guys did that with Wyatt Thompson yesterday. I wasn't here yesterday, so the appropriate grief Tommy needs to catch for the weekend's activities can happen today as well. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Good to have you back today. I know that you were out on the golf course yesterday. Kind of a windy day to get out there and play.
Today's apparently worse. Man, that was probably, and I grew up in the Texas Panhandle where it's always windy, right? It's always windy. But there are no courses there like as nice and challenging as Crestview was, where we had our event yesterday. Shout out to Crestview, by the way, sponsor of this program. They got a huge Special Olympics event happening yesterday and today. So I know they're going to put on a good show. I know those Olympians won't care about the weather at all. One of the things that Crestview does, they have tournaments all year long. We always tell you to go check it out. You've probably played the course if you're a golfer through some charity event. Well, we had one, and we appreciate Crestview's support of the program, by the way. Give them a call. Check out the facilities, all the great stuff happening over there on their 36 holes of golf, tennis, all the good stuff. So we're out there, and it's there's four of us playing. A lot of fun. Shout out to Brian Green and Anthony Claggett, two of the Wichita State baseball coaches, Bart Dick, Grady Dick's dad. It was a fun team to be with, and it was difficult. Like, it was hard. We would go into a hole, Tommy, like a par three that normally plays like 170. And we're like, all right, do we all get out our three woods and go attack this at like 210? And we did. Yeah. And like it was hard. Like, you could barely get it there.
Yeah.
And you had to make good contact with a three wood to hit a 170 par three. Like, it was wild out there trying to play in that. And it was just beat you down constantly.
I don't care what the wind is doing. There is nothing more humbling than stepping up to a par three and pulling out a driver or a three wood or something like that. And you know, you never, like, let's say you hit a really good shot and you end up, you know, 10 feet away from the pin. You're not ever going to tell anybody what club you hit. I knew a guy that got a hole in one on a par three. He was in the group right in front of me. This was a couple of years ago, and I'm not going to share his name. But it was a really stiff wind, you know, out of the south, and he was hitting into the wind, and he hit driver, and he hit a hole in one. And you know, he was not, I mean, he was excited, but he's not going to admit that to everybody that he hit a driver on a par three and made a hole in one.
That's I don't have that much pride. If I can get it there. Yeah. What is 17 on the north out there? It's like
180, 185 usually.
I don't have any shame in this. So I can tell, like, I don't have 180 in the bag unless I hit a three wood well. Like, that club, as far as my irons, it doesn't exist. Yeah. Like, I can get, like, if I hit my four iron perfectly, I guess I could maybe get 180, but there's no chance I'm doing that on a par three. Like, I'm not going to hit that club good enough and accurately enough to, I have to, you know, I, so I got to, there were a lot of times yesterday where it's like, I'm just going to soft swing my driver. I don't know what else to do. Like, these distances the wind's creating, like, I just don't have it.
I'll tell you what you need to do. Hit the gym a little bit more, buddy. Like, pump some iron, lift some weights. Get out there.
Nice transition. I watched this weekend. Adam Hadwin's built exactly like me. So, like, that's not the problem. I can tell you that right now.
Is that the word that you would use? Scrawny?
Wiry.
Wiry. Okay. That's a little bit more positive.
Undersized, we'll call it. But I walked out. Yeah, Hadwin's, he's my size. I'm like, this is incredible. But then you watch him hit it and the ball just like flies off of his club. So I don't know what I'm doing wrong, but it ain't that. And so, yeah, I got to give it everything I have with, you know, a 3-wood on a 25 mile per hour wind in my face on a par 3 to get it there. But it was humbling for sure. Probably not as humbling as getting smoked by your wife at Topgolf in every game that you participate in. That would probably be more humbling, I think. I would think. I don't know, because my wife has never beat me at Topgolf. Tommy, do you have any insight on that?
I was hoping, since you were not on the show yesterday, that you had forgotten about that encounter. But I mean, you know, look, it is what it is. My wife, you know, when she gets competitive, she gets out there, she'll wipe the floor with everybody. And that's what happened to me.
How does that conversation on the way home go? Because I appreciated her level of trash talk. The pretty good for a lefty.
Yeah, it's, you know, like, it's good. I mean, like, her trash talk game is pretty solid. This is nothing new. I mean, I've been with my wife for 10 years now. Within the first couple of months, we went bowling and she beat me in bowling. And it was a shock to the system. You know, kind of a little bit of a gut punch. Like, do I want to stay in this relationship? Do I want to continue this? And I've stuck it out, and it hasn't changed. I mean, she still beats me in just about everything that we compete in. That's why I typically, like, don't want to compete against her in anything. I'd rather have her on my team.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, I'm glad you're not embarrassed by that anymore. We were certainly embarrassed for you, but you know, it's,
I appreciate the level of concern.
Yeah, it's good. My wife is also very competitive and athletic, and I actually like it. Like, if we go play pickleball, like, we can go and she'll beat me. Like, she could, there's a lot of things that she's better than me, but it was nice to not have the pressure of losing to my wife while watching you lose to your wife.
Because your wife wasn't there. I mean, I think it had it might have been a different scenario.
She can't play golf anyway, but like, it's nice to not have that pressure.
I know we always talk, like, in the context of football, the transitive property, you know, this team beat this team, so that team would beat that team. My wife beat me, but I beat Adam Hadwin in the Beat the Pro. So would that mean my wife could then beat Adam Hadwin?
At Topgolf, maybe.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of Topgolf, because Topgolf is, I don't even, like, I feel like the scores are pretend scores. Like, I don't even know what they are or how they're accumulated. But I have many times, like, whatever, like, there'll be just one where, let's say you're on the top shelf and whatever club is just, like, the target is perfect, and played with some really good golfers, and I just keep, like, the 9-iron and just pepper that target every time and beat it. And it, like, it makes people, but whatever, it's fun. It's humbling.
You know, if you want to give me some grief about my wife beating me, the best club that you swung the entire day was the little kid club.
Was that a kid's club?
Yeah, that was, I mean, it was like half the size of a regular club.
It says most forgiving. No, I know, but it was like, it's most forgiving and it's with the grown up clubs. And then there's a smaller version for kids.
Sure. Looked like a kid's club.
So this club, if you play golf, it's a driver probably the size of a pitching wedge. And I thought about this later, because I was still trying to hit it like a driver, but basically in a toilet squat, if you can picture that. But I think what I think that club is supposed to do is, I think you're supposed to line it up like you line up a pitching wedge. I think it's a grown-up club that you just swing it like a pitching wedge. I think that's what it's supposed to be. But it works. Like, it, you hit it solid.
Look,
every time.
It's the equivalent of going bowling with bumpers. That's basically what you were doing.
I was swinging out of my shoes to try and hit that little thing all the way to the fence, and I've had got it there a few times.
I was very proud of you. I mean, you know,
it was fun to hit.
You and every other 10-year-old, you know, hit that club really well.
Yeah, I would beat anybody in golf any way possible. If I hit the top lip of a bunker and it goes straight up in the air and gets, like, I'll take anything. I have no shame in golf, like, zero, zilch. If I hit a driver on a par 3 and it's a hole in one, everybody on the planet's going to hear about it. I got none of that in my golf game. And we've talked about it before. Like, if I'm afraid of water, I'm afraid to hit a range ball because I know what's going to happen there most likely and all the possible outcomes. All right. So we took a side road there. The Chiefs make a big move. Let's get this and then we'll get into it. Joshua Uche. And so they basically at the surface, Tommy, they make a move. And we wondered last week after the D-Hop trade, I thought this was in the cards. I thought they were going to move again. And this was the position I thought they would move for, because it will be the position, and we'll probably see other pass rushers traded for. It's the position I think they need pretty badly. We've had enough time to look at it. I don't think they have enough of a pass rush. It's interesting. Brandon Zenner and I were looking yesterday, and by the analytics, their pressure rate is about league average, the Chiefs. But then when it comes to like finishing the job and sacks, they're down all the way at like 22nd or 23rd in the league. Their pass rush isn't where it needs to be. And I don't think there was any way to get it there outside of going to make a move. So they go and they make their move and they get a guy who's really interesting, who's been very good in this league recently. He wasn't doing a lot with the Pats this year, but I mean, you got to go all the way back, Tommy, to 2022 to see him have 11 and a half sacks. So this is a dude with some juice, former second round pick, I think. I love the move and I love the fact that they made it. And while now I would guess that they're probably done, there's still a week left and we're seeing teams get better around them. And I just don't think there's any reason they don't stay on the phone.
I thought cornerback would have been another, position that they would have maybe looked at defensively, but I'm okay with this move. They only gave up a sixth round draft pick. And so that's fine. I mean, that's kind of a low risk move to make to bring in Uche. And I mean, at the end of the day, George Karlaftis can't do it by himself. He's played really well. He's had nice games, but he can't rush from both sides at the same time. I mean, I think it shows, number one, the importance of the Chiefs having depth at that position, having more depth at edge rusher, but then also kind of their lack of faith in Felix Anudike Uzomah and his development. I mean, he's been there, but he hasn't been, I don't even want to say effective. He hasn't been a difference maker, let's put it that way, for the Chiefs so far this season on the other side. And Mike Dana's been all right. I know that they're, expecting Charles Omenihu back at some point this season also, who in a limited time, limited role last year, looked pretty good. And, of course, went down with that injury and has been rehabbing that. So I'm fine with this because it provides depth. It also provides impact alongside George Karlaftis. The other thing about the Chiefs defensively is that it's become their identity. It's not just a one-off or a two-off. Like, this is what they've done all season long, is stop the run. The interior defense has been really, really good. But outside of the tackle box, that's really where, they probably could have used an upgrade. And so I'm okay with this move. I think it's the right move, low cost for them to acquire Uche. And he can be, I think a difference maker here pretty soon, because he's had opportunities to do that in his career thus far.
I think it's a potentially pretty high impact move. I mean, yes, they stop the run well and they'll need to do that. But when you lose, Watson at corner, it puts more pressure on your pass rush to bail out, right, the other corners that are there. They didn't have that. And the other thing is, and this is where I'd be curious to get your take on it, because I've read this as being aggressive at the deadline from the outright. You thought they'd be a little more conservative, and they're clearly not doing that. Like, do you think this is a reaction to what's happening around them? Simply a reaction to the injuries? I'm just glad they're doing it. And I think it's necessary. I would say, I think there are teams that have gotten significantly better, and I think they need to be doing this stuff to ensure, even though they're undefeated and I get all of that, all I'm thinking about is the postseason. And I feel like there are better teams in their way than what I thought there would be, based on their injuries, yet mostly, but based on also like how good we thought those teams would be. I think it's a matter of they need to get better as much as anything else if they want to win this third Super Bowl.
Yeah, I just think reinforcements are, what's on the table for them, because their identity, and I mentioned this a few minutes ago, and I've said this multiple times before, their identity is such where they're not going to implement shock and awe, that they're going to sneak up behind you, and then all of a sudden they're beating you. That's what this team has done all season long. And so I think that they sneakily would like to continue that for sure, because that's worked for them. But the margins have been really small for Kansas City. I mean, you take away a couple of situations, they could very easily, be 4-3 or 3-4 or something like that. If a couple things go differently for Kansas City. So I think really all this is, I honestly don't believe that it is in reaction to anything that any other team has done or a success level of any other team. I just think for them, it's trying to make those margins a little bit wider and bringing in reinforcements. That's really what I think it is.
Yeah, I don't think they're wide. I don't think the margins are as wide as I thought they would be.
They're not. They've been very narrow. I just think they would like to slightly widen that a little bit by making, really stealth upgrades and strategic upgrades where they feel like they can. Honestly, with the move that, I think cornerback defensively would still be an area ideally would like to see them address. Now that I know that Brett Veach is going to be aggressive, I'm off of that bandwagon of he's not doing anything, because clearly he has. So now I'm thinking, well, shoot, if you're going to go make a couple of moves, do some other ones too. Cornerback would be a position. And then I mentioned this on the show yesterday that left tackle has turned into a major concern. It before it was kind of, just not great, wasn't ideal, serviceable, manageable. It's not good. And so I don't think they'll trade for anybody, because there, I don't know if there's a lot of people that you can trade for, but I certainly think, and my suggestion was, you make a call to Donovan Smith. He's not an impact player, but he's sitting on the sidelines right now. He knows the system. Bring him in, let him fill that gap at least for the remainder of the season.
Yeah, they know something there. It's strange that they wouldn't have gone to that. Andy Reid talked about left tackle yesterday, and it didn't give any indication that they were thinking anything other than needing the young guys to get better. I think they're probably rolling with that. Smith is an interesting idea. I don't think there's going to be any corners. Maybe if a team falls out of contention and you've got an expiring contract.
It sounds like the Rams are not necessarily shopping, but they are open to hearing offers on Tre'Davious White. Now that might be out of the Chiefs, price range. I don't exactly know what his contract situation is, but there are a couple of cornerbacks that are out there that are on the market.
In it, man. The Rams are in it. They don't need to be doing anything to make themselves worse.
What it sounded as of yesterday that McVay was, that they're open to having conversations. And I think a lot of it more is like, they're open to anything, whether that's signing him to a long-term deal or putting him in a better situation. And I think there are a couple of other players in the secondary that are like that.
So here's one to file away to, and a name that we've talked about, and probably the ship has sailed on this, but I'm just reading here this morning that Deontay Johnson is, Adam Schefter's reporting that he is expected to be traded. So that's interesting. They did clear up money. I don't know how much of that Uche takes up. That's why I thought they would make another trade last week, by the way, when they cleared up the money, the $5 million or whatever that they did through some restructuring with Juwan Taylor. That's when I was like, all right, they're going to make another move here, because they didn't need to do that. They didn't have to do it. They did it. And it's like they're freeing up cap space. Deontay Johnson's contract's a little bit more complicated, but I don't know how much of that, the Titans deal, how much of that this year money can be eaten. He's still an elite level difference making type player. I don't know with all the injuries, if you're the Chiefs, you just say, well, it's a 1 year rental type thing. Do we go ahead and push it in? And now you're talking about probably a second or third round pick at that point on the price point.
I don't think so either.
And I think it would be highly, highly, highly unlikely. I don't bring it up just for the Chiefs. I bring it up because now the competition also has a chance potentially to go after Deontay Johnson. And, the Steelers aren't going to do it. He already left there, right? And we'll get to the Steelers in a little bit. But, do the Bills really push it all in and go do something else? Could the Ravens get in on a move like that? The Chargers, what would they do with an elite level number one type receiver? There are a lot of really interesting places where I saw his name pop up, and it's like, God, you almost just want to keep him off the market if you're the Chiefs, because he's the kind of player for a team that could make an absolute impact. He's very good. And now if he's back on the market, that's going to make somebody a whole lot better. I don't know who it's going to be. I don't think it's going to be the Chiefs, but there's almost a cat and mouse game there of like, where does he go?
Yeah, it's not going to be the Chiefs. I don't think they can afford it. Well, yeah. And the team that just stands out to me like a sore thumb that I can absolutely see making a move, the Houston Texans. They've lost Nico Collins for a few weeks. Steph Diggs exited the game on Sunday with a knee injury. They're a team that they feel like they absolutely should contend for a title this year. They need reinforcements at wide receiver due to injuries. Their top two guys are, you know, currently injured. So that's where I would look for sure.
I would keep an eye on the 49ers. I would keep an eye on the Buccaneers.
How about the Commanders?
The Commanders, absolutely. I mean, he is kind of what Rashi Rice does, right? Like, he's a high volume, very talented. I mean, you saw it when he got Andy Dalton in there, how he just took off, right? When it wasn't Bryce Young. So that name popped up too. We'll get into all of this. Dan Israel coming up top of the next hour. Get his take on Uche. I got a sneaky suspicion this Uche move is going to be highly impactful. I think it's going to make their pass rush a whole lot better. I really do. We'll get into that. I want to talk about the Steelers because I think they're for real. I think they're best team in the AFC North. Let's hit it. It was a win over the Giants. Big deal, right? But I'm curious to get Tommy's take on that. If he's feeling that at all. Of course, the Ravens in that division. 869-1240 is the number to call. You can also leave us your video comments, Facebook, YouTube, X. Thanks for watching us on 12 News Connected. Thanks for listening to us on the Odyssey app. You can leave us voice messages on the Odyssey app. It's Albrecht and Castor. It's a Tuesday. We're coming right back. Welcome back in, everybody. This portion of the program brought to you by Pepin Suter Remodeling. So glad to have them in support of the program here. Pepin Suter did a kitchen remodel for us. We've got them on board. All your home remodeling needs. You can go to Pepin Suter Remodeling's website, which is available at pepinsuter.com, P-E-P-I-N-S-U-T-E-R. You can give them a call, 316-573-6822. I say this all the time. Easily the best bid we got on our project by a long shot. And then the work they did was really good. Or we wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't get on here and recommend it. But the other thing is they took really good care of our family. They had fake countertops for us to be able to use. We had access to our refrigerator. They cleaned up every day. They did everything they could to make sure the process was as painless as possible in a kitchen remodel. And we couldn't recommend them enough. Pepin Suter Remodeling, give them a call for all your home remodeling needs today. All right, Tommy. Monday Night Football. I don't know if I'm ahead of the masses, but when I watch the Steelers gain 426 yards, and they should have had a whole lot more points than they did. They were ineffective in the red zone. Should have at least had 30. Had a touchdown called back. Russell Wilson has provided them what they need. That's a good defense they played last night. And in fact, the defense is probably what kept the Giants in the game as long as it did. That pass rush, they can run the ball now. Russell Wilson can at least find the big targets there. The fact that they're 6-2, I think this is the best team in the AFC North. I think they are a more complete team than the Ravens.
They're a good team. They're a good team. They're a playoff team. I don't know if they're better than the Ravens are. They have a better record than the Ravens do. I don't know if they are more talented than the Ravens are, but they're currently at a better. They have a better record and they're playing better than the Ravens are. So I'll give you a couple of those points. But as an overall better team, I'm not sure that I buy that. More complete, maybe, but I think the ceiling is higher for the Ravens. I think that the Ravens are, more explosive in all of those different ways. Now, the Ravens lost to the one-win Browns on Sunday. So they're 5-3. They're in second place in the division and a team that had major, major expectations when they brought in Derrick Henry. They should be better than 5-3 right now, that's for sure. But it doesn't take anything away from the Steelers. I think they're a good team. And I think that, you know, I was wrong when I thought that they were making a mistake moving away from Justin Fields this season. I thought that they needed to stick with Fields and see what they really have in him. But their offense has worked a lot better under Russell Wilson.
They were 4-2, and Fields while Fields was playing, and Aikman pointed this out, and I agree with it, Fields was probably playing his best football, but it wasn't very good football. Yeah. Like, Fields still wasn't playing very well, sure, and they were 4-2. And then it's like same old Steelers, right? They'll be good despite their quarterback. Russell Wilson's playing really well, and he, at minimum, has the ability to get the best out of a receiver as good as George Pickett. Like, that is a pretty perfect combination. And for me, the reason I say it is because I watch their defense just make big play after big play after big play. And I watch the Ravens, who have lost games, not just now to the Browns, but to the Raiders. But listen to these. This is my problem with Baltimore. Here's what they've given up this year. 27, 26, 25, 10, 38, 23, 31, and now 29 points. Their defense kind of sucks. And so, like, that's when I look at it and say that is because I love the addition of Derrick Henry. I think Lamar Jackson's playing his best football, but their defense is not very good. Like, not even not really good. They're just not very good. And so when I see a team like the Steelers who are balanced, and I think about a cold weather game with them where really they're just trying to get a couple of big plays out of the passing game, run the ball, and let loose your pass rush. We know what a pass rush can do in the postseason. It can totally disrupt everything. I look at the Steelers right now, and I think, like, they're at minimum a real competitor for the Super Bowl, like, at minimum. But I think at the top end, they may be the biggest competitor for a Super Bowl.
Look, I think that you, as far as the assessment,
they play the Chiefs, by the way, on Christmas, which will be good.
They do. That'll be a really good game. You know, just looking at the Ravens' schedule, I think it's more difficult than the Steelers' schedule is for the remaining games. I mean, the Ravens have maybe two games on their remaining schedule that you could probably for sure pencil in as wins. They get the Browns again. I would imagine, you know, that's the final game of the season, and that's at home. I would imagine that, you know, they'll be able to take that, you know, and because I'm sure that they're pretty upset about losing to Cleveland on Sunday. So that's there, and then they go on the road to New York to take on the Giants. But other than that, I mean, they've still got the Steelers twice. They've got the Texans. They've got, you know, the Bengals. They've got the Broncos, who are 5-3. So they've got good teams remaining left on their schedule. The Steelers do as well, but not quite at that level. I mean, obviously, the Steelers play the Chiefs. They play the right. Eagles. They play the Ravens, of course, twice. But they still have the Browns twice. I think that overall the Ravens' schedule is a little bit tougher down the stretch than Pittsburgh is. But if, again, I continue to go back to, if the Ravens are able to play to their potential, they didn't on Sunday, but if they can play to their potential, I do think that they're a more talented team from top to bottom than Pittsburgh is. I just think that Pittsburgh has been able to execute better.
Pittsburgh has right now, behind Buffalo, the best point differential in the AFC. If I'm looking at Denver's right there, man. Denver has a better point differential than Kansas City. Can you believe that? If I'm looking right now in the AFC, and I'm just, because really the only thing that matters is the postseason, because we're paying attention to the Chiefs and, you know, it's Super Bowl or bust and all that. If I'm looking across the AFC now and I'm trying to, like, power rank teams in the postseason and, like, threat level to the Chiefs, it's close right now for me between Baltimore, Pittsburgh, and Buffalo. I would like to put Houston there, but I don't have them there right now. They're not, look, they're 6-2. They're main, but, and maybe when they get healthy, that changes back. But right now, I'm not putting them over either any of those three teams. And the trade deadline is going to make an impact here. You know, Denver, not a good enough quarterback. Chargers, they need a little more firepower offensively that maybe they could acquire and become a contender. Cincinnati, they lost again. You know, if they get there by the end of things, then I'm never going to count them out.
Saying that every single week. If
I know,
they get there, they just got to get there.
It's a Joe Burrow thing. Like I said that about the Chiefs last year, and they won the Super Bowl. They got to get there, But if they get there, they're going to be dangerous. But I don't know if their
Chiefs
defense
weren't 3-5 though at any point. I mean,
they lost 4 of 6.
You're
at
right.
One point.
You're right.
Yeah.
But you know,
at one
still
portion
a winning
of
record.
Their schedule,
I mean, the Bengals
they were 3-5.
The Bengals have dug themselves a deeper hole than the Chiefs were ever in a year ago. That it's going to be more difficult for them to crawl out of because. On top of that, not only are they 3-5, but look at the two teams that are ahead of them in the division. The Chiefs were not in as good of a division a year ago.
Yeah.
And so that helped, you know, sort of soften that blow.
Yeah, the only point is the Chiefs went through an 8-game stretch like this, basically, that they were essentially 3-5. Now, they got there, but it was more of if they get there, you like them. I don't like the Bengals for the same reasons I like the Chiefs. I wouldn't say they're going to, you know, they're going to be fine. They won a Super Bowl. But if they get there, they still have Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase, right? So they're a dangerous team when you have those two, but their defense is nowhere near where it's going to need to be if they're a real threat. It is wild, and I just watched Pittsburgh, and we always want to sort of write them off, at least I do, because I'm like, yeah, they don't have a good enough quarterback. They're like, great, I'm glad they're winning these games. Won't matter in the postseason because they don't have a good enough quarterback. Well, they've got a quarterback that's going into the Hall of Fame and has won Super Bowls. So
and look, again, I'm not taking anything away from Pittsburgh because, yeah, I mean, again, their record is what, you know, they are what their record says they are. They're 6-2. They are leading the division currently. Credit to them. Credit to Mike Tomlin for, you know, bringing the team together and making the decision and having the foresight to bring in Russell Wilson and sit down Justin Fields, even with the winning record. And Russ has been playing really well. Credit to him. That being said, though, I don't want to overreact to them beating the Giants like that, you know, in primetime.
It's
like
not
that. That was great. I mean, cool, but like it's the Giants and like they're really bad. And Daniel Jones should be done and Brian Daboll should be done. Like it's not working for the Giants. And so I don't want to overreact to that and start like, you know, crowning the Steelers or anything because they beat the lowly Giants on Monday Night Football. I think out of the three teams that you listed that you have as being like the most dangerous threat
Baltimore,
to the Chiefs, Buffalo, Pittsburgh, for me right now at this moment, it's Buffalo. And it's the Amari Cooper acquisition. And it's not even just because of Amari Cooper.
He hasn't even done
it's
anything.
Because of the opportunities that it has allowed the other receivers. Keon Coleman and Khalil Shakir, like those guys have been able to feast because defenses are scared of Amari Cooper now and catching the ball from Josh Allen. And, of course, James Cook has been outstanding too. So for me, out of those three teams right now, it's Buffalo.
Buffalo has, and I probably, there. It's probably 1A and 1B for me, Buffalo and Pittsburgh, and Baltimore maybe even 1C, but Baltimore's defense is so bad, I'm telling you right now, they're not doing anything unless they start playing better defense. Like, Tommy, their defense right now is only better than Jacksonville, the Raiders, and you can end the list. That is crazy. That's crazy. They're giving up 24, 25 points every game. That ain't going to cut it in the postseason when the weather cuts cold. It's just not. And so we'll see. And they have an opportunity to also get better between now and then. And listen, the reality for the Chiefs is all three of those teams are very real threats and contenders. More so probably than I thought any of them would be. With the exception of Baltimore because of the Derrick Henry acquisition, you're like, oh, okay, yeah, they're going to be a threat. I think all three of those teams are significantly better. And for Pittsburgh, I get it. They beat the Jets last week. They beat the Giants. I don't want to overreact to that either. It's not so much that they won those games. It's just watching, A, the pass rush and knowing how big a deal that can be in the postseason, and B, Russell Wilson bring a dynamic to this offense that hasn't been there for years, which is the ability to make an explosive play. Like they have, like you couldn't count on them for an explosive play for the last 3 years if their lives depended on it. Well, now they have that, and look what it's done for their run game, and look what, you know, like that's the part of it for me when I think about the postseason. If their defense can do that, they may only need 2-3 explosive plays in a game. That might be enough.
Yeah, the Ravens need to channel what they did defensively in Week 4 when they played the Bills and they held the Bills to 10 points.
Right, I don't even know how that happened.
And 236 total yards. They need to channel that again. What's surprising about the Ravens' defense, in my mind, is that when you've got Derrick Henry running the football, you should be able to control the tempo and control the ball and not put your defense in bad situations where they're out on the field a ton. That really hasn't happened. And so that might be something that, and I'm sure John Harbaugh is trying to figure that part of it out. Like, how do we control the tempo and control the ball and the clock more with Derrick Henry so we don't have to put the burden on our defense?
And by the way, the only other, you know, I mentioned the Jags and Raiders. You go to the NFC, the only defense there that's been worse is the Panthers. So, like, you're talking like bottom level. It's not even that it's not great. It's bottom level bad. So we'll see. And the Ravens are going to win a ton of games, and they're dangerous, and they're still loaded and all these things. This is more of a tip of the cap to Pittsburgh for me than anything else, just watching that and the way they played through. All right, we're going to come back. We'll wrap up hour number one. We'll ask Dan Israel what he thinks about that. Who does he think is the biggest threat to the Chiefs? I'd be curious to get his take. That's coming top of hour number two. What a fun time of the year. Don't pay attention to that wind outside. But we got World Series. We got Super Bowl. Do we have a World Series, though? Is it already over? We'll touch on that next on Sports Daily. Welcome back, everybody. We mentioned Crestview Country Club earlier. I want to mention their holidays at the club, brunch experiences, New Year's Eve event, youth activities to pair with some of the adult nights coming up. They've got Thanksgiving brunches. They make Thanksgiving meals. We utilize that, by the way. We have the last two or three Thanksgivings where we take theirs and bring it home. So the HDO store's Thanksgiving's like the biggest week of the year. It's an insanity. And I always work TV on Thanksgiving. So we have utilized that. They get it all ready for you. You take it home, you finish cooking it. It's been really nice. But that's all coming up at Crestview. We appreciate their, you know, support of the show. Tommy, the Dodgers are trying to wrap this thing up quicker, I think, even if you're a Yankee hater like me, quicker than I had hoped. They have a chance to do it tonight in New York. I wanted a competitive series. I'm having an internal struggle. Like, as much as I would love to see the Yankees get swept, I would like to stretch this out and have it be a better series. Probably. I don't know. That's you're getting a good thing either way there. I got no love lost for the Yankees, so it'll be fine if they do it. But yeah, it's not over. You know, I don't buy into the calling things early. It's very likely over, but we've seen 3-0 decimated. And I would say that I think this is a talented enough team, if they were going to do it, to do it. The problem is you got to imagine beating the Dodgers four times in a row. It's more about, you know, beating that team that many times in a row that makes it hard.
I think you can call it. It's over. I mean, the series is over. The Dodgers.
Now you like to do that more than I do.
The Dodgers will win it tonight. Did you? I know you didn't watch the game yesterday because you were locked in on Russell Wilson and what the Steelers were doing against the Giants. Did you catch the Yankees' body language throughout the entire game? Like, they looked 1,000% defeated. They looked like the World Series was already done and over with last night. And really, this series in my mind was over as soon as Freddie Freeman hit the walk-off grand slam on Friday night. I mean, it was done at that point. Like, that was so deflating. That's really hard to come back from. I told my wife, we were watching it together, and she might have fell asleep, but I woke her up and I told her what had happened. And I said, it's done. Like, it's over at this point. That's hard to come back from if you're the Yankees. They've not been able to bounce back from that. You know, of course, they threw Gerrit Cole in game one, didn't get the win. They threw Carlos Rodon in game two, didn't get the win. Now, yep. I know that their backs are clearly up against a wall now, and you never know what will happen with a desperate team in that scenario. But, man, just watching them in the dugout last night, you would have thought that they were at a funeral and not the World Series. And as far as I'm concerned, it's done and over with.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's never done till it's done. I fall more in line with that. It's very likely to be done. But, you know, everyone, when the Yankees were up 3-0 on the Red Sox, said that series was over too, and it obviously wasn't. But that Red Sox team did have a little more swag to it at the time. They've got to channel that. You know, if they can get one, if they don't get swept, I think it improves, you know, the possibility that what you're talking about could turn around. You're at home. The problem for the Yankees, I think, is when Aaron Judge doesn't go well, like, they're a more pitchable team than like the Dodgers, for instance. Their sluggers strike out. And here's what I love about baseball, and I probably am going too big picture with this, but man, it sure feels like that old Billy Beane, three true outcome things just like flying out the window. Like if you strike out a ton, you're going to be in trouble. And right now they're striking out a ton and they're in trouble. And you can't always get bailed out by the home run. And that's, I hope that baseball holistically makes that change, because I think it provides a much, much better product. Freddie Freeman very likely will be your MVP. I think I put a futures on Kike Hernandez. We talked about Stanton. You know, Freeman, nobody, there probably not a lot of bets on Freeman, at least before the series, because we all thought he needed a walker to get around to first base.
Well, and I think that, you know, it's interesting that a former MVP can get overshadowed by multiple other players on both rosters.
He wouldn't have if he wasn't hurt. I mean, did you see him in the series?
I think he still would
get to first base.
I think he still would have been, solely because his name is not Judge or Shohei. And, you know, I mean, Mookie Betts kind of gets overshadowed. Giancarlo Stanton kind of gets overshadowed, just simply because, again, they're not Judge and Shohei. But, man, Aaron Judge, I don't know if there's been another player that is so dominant in the regular season and just completely disappears in the postseason. And that's unfortunately what's happened to him. And, you know, I do kind of feel bad for him, because that's a whole lot of pressure in an environment and in a market where you can't get away with that. And when it matters the most, he's not been able to show up. I think he's pressing. I think he's pushing. In my mind, it's done tonight. I think the Dodgers sweep.
Cool. I haven't even looked at the – I won some money with the Dodgers last night because I thought they'd win. I haven't looked at the pitching. I'll have to look at the pitching matchup. I don't have a game-specific prediction for you yet. But we'll get into that in the second hour. When we come back, a couple things we want to pick the brain of Dan Israel with as it pertains to the Chiefs. They get the win against the Raiders, you know, things from that game, things to the future, and things bigger picture that we've sort of been pondering here in this first hour. Dan Israel, executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network, our Chiefs insider, joins us in the next segment. Keep it here. Sports Daily, coming right back.